Amen. So I am blind. I am blind, Dave, and I am an alcoholic. Very good. My sobriety date is July of 98, so this month, is I just got 13 years this month. Hey. Very good. It's real good to be here at the Serenity Group. I think I was here in 08 or 07, somewhere back around there. It's good to be back. My drinking problem, it began taking shape, really start taking shape in high school, you know, consistent drinking. It was every weekend. What happens, I met a girl in high school, and her folks was drunks. And they didn't mind that we drank with them. So that was really cool. And so my girlfriend and her mother would pick me up on Friday. They'd come pick me up at school, and off I went across town to their house, and they had the ice chest in the back seat when they picked me up, and it was pop top, and it was, so we partied down all weekend. It was fun then, having a good time. And I graduated in 68. Now, y'all know what was happening back in the 60s. There were some other things you could try out too if you wanted to. And so I tried some of those things, and you know, it really accelerated the process for me. And I think of where Bill said, then the doctor came and began to administer heavy sedatives. Next day found me doing both gin and sedatives. This combination soon landed me on the rocks. And it soon landed me on the rocks too. Didn't take long. The developing undertow of alcoholism, it started growing stronger. You can feel that current, you know. And I felt myself being pulled out into turbulent waters, going over my head. And by the age of 24, I was feeling the desperation of a drowning man. And although I claimed I was an atheist, by 1973, I walked into a church hoping to find God. I had a God-sized problem. And I found God there. And I had quite a spiritual experience when I went to church. And it did free me from the obsession. It really did. When I sincerely offered myself to the God of my understanding, a very great effect was felt at once, just like the big book says. And for the next 25 years, I pursued my faith and served my church with zeal. Yeah, the old boy was on fire, all right. I was riding high. But I soon started getting shot out of the saddle by these drinking relapses and other behavior which seems to accompany drunkenness. And all that just covered my Christian witness with shame. And after 25 years of relapsing, I was confused and baffled by alcoholism. Why couldn't I stay stopped? You know, the big book prophesies that if I have an alcoholic mind, the time and place will come. I will drink again. It said that although our decision to turn our will and life over to the care of God was a vital and crucial step, it would have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. I didn't do all that kind of stuff. When I went to church, they taught me how to give my life to God. And that was as far as it went. From then on, it was just go to church. In AA, they tell me that that third step experience will not last if I don't launch out into a course of vigorous action, a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. I didn't do any of that. And that was the reason why I started relapsing. You know, and I could not understand it until I got into AA. But I didn't like looking at those 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 steps. You know, I heard about they brought a van full of guys from the treatment center one time. And apparently it was this one fellow's first day in treatment. And they asked him to read how it works. So he's reading, and here are the steps we take which are suggested as a program of recovery. And he started reading the steps. And he read that 4 and 5. You could hear him think about that. And he read, he got to 8 and 9, and he said, made a list of all persons we had harmed became willing to make amends to them all, made direct amends to such people. He said, Jesus Christ, have y'all read this? But I want to tell you that I'm here today after 25 years of relapsing when I thought I had found the answer and still couldn't stop it. What I thank God today for is those house cleaning steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and for the continuing to take personal inventory and continuing to set right any new mistakes as we go along, the maintenance steps. For those are the ones that allow me to keep a finger on my spiritual pulse so that I can see if I'm really spiritually fit today or am I again drifting blindly toward a drink. And believe me, without those maintenance steps, you will become just as blind as me. So let's look at step one for a second. Admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. You know what that means to me is that if I start drinking, that is going to spin out of control and become a very unhappy situation. And the second part of step one tells me that if I try to stop drinking and try to get sober, put the plug in the jug, as they say, that is going to spin out of control and become a very unhappy situation. The big book says that I will presently try the old game again because I am not happy about being sober. The alcoholic is damned if you do and damned if you don't. Drinking becomes miserable. Not drinking becomes miserable. That is a baffling situation, and it is a futile existence. So the big book says this, once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they show the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. So I'm going to try to connect the dots for you just a little bit tonight. We say that alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. You've heard that, right? I want you to know that its only power is in keeping you baffled. You know, I like to think of the bullfighter, the matador. He goes out in this arena, and all he's got is this, cape thing. And they open the gate, and out comes this 2,000-pound bred-to-be ferocious bull. And he looks around, and he sees this dude waving his cape, you know. And now, the art of being a good matador is you got to keep the bull's attention on the cape. And you get kind of crouched down behind that cape, and here he comes. He's charging at you, and you wave that thing, and you time it just right, you sidestep, and you let him go through the cape. Poof. And as he does, you put a dagger in his shoulder. And now he whirls around and he's really upset. And he's looking around, who did that? You know, and you got to get him back to looking at that cape, looking at that cape. Here he comes. And you sidestep again and poof, he goes right through the cape and you put another dagger in him. I want you to know that bull is about to die a slow, miserable death because he keeps fighting with the cape. What if he figured out that the real problem was that little head right above the cape? What if he learned to focus on that and charge at that instead of the cape? How long do you think this match would last? One pass. Oh God, I'd hate to watch it. The 12 and 12 says our whole trouble had been the misuse of willpower. We had tried to bombard our problem with it instead of attempting to bring it into agreement with God's will for us. So we say this in the rooms of recovery, the problem ain't the problem. You know, I say that, you know, the big book tells us that drinking is just a symptom, right? I will never whip alcohol in hand-to-hand combat. I'm fighting with the symptom. It's interesting. I tell the people at the treatment center, I say, well, you're here because you figured you have a drug and alcohol problem, right? Mm-hmm. I say, well, now we're going to take away your drugs and alcohol, and now you're left with the problem. And that's what we've got to fix. Or the drugs and alcohol will just keep popping back up. So I had a friend, he was talking one time, he had used up everybody he knew in Austin, got in his old clunker mobile and drove to Houston. And after a few months down there, he kind of used up everybody who'd put up with him. Now he's in his clunker mobile trying to drive back to Austin. And he has no more ideas. And he's on I-10 heading west. And he's seriously thinking about ending his life. He is miserable. And for a brief moment, he happened to notice that he was driving into one of the most beautiful sunsets he had ever seen. But a moment later, he's back to thinking about ending his life. You know, I also heard a guy right after that say in a meeting that it was a... He was driving down one of our hill country roads out here on Road 2222 or something. It was a spring morning, one of them crisp mornings where you roll down your car windows and it's brisk and it feels good. And he was wanting to end his life. He was thinking about driving off of the next cliff. And he just happened to notice that he was driving into a beautiful sunrise. And he was wondering why he couldn't feel it. He wanted to die. You know, there's a guy that I love. I call him Big E. Everybody calls him Big E. And he's pretty old now. Old World War II vet. I used to love to listen to Big E share because he always opened up by saying, well, I opened my blinkers this morning at 0700 hours. And he said, and I could smell coffee. I knew my bride had the coffee on. Now, they've been married over 60 years. I knew my bride had the coffee on. And he said, I put my feet in my house slippers and made my way into the kitchen. And sure enough, there's me a cup of coffee sitting on the table. My newspapers rolled up there. He said, I sat down in my chair and was having a cup of coffee with my bride, reading the morning paper. He said, my cat jumped in my lap and I'm petting my cat. And he said, all of a sudden, I am overflowing with gratitude and thinking, life can't get any better than this. Now, you know, we're the people who like to dance on the tabletop, shoot out the lights, right? And you know, living on the edge and flipping cars and dodging bullets. And all of a sudden, you know, we come in today and we sit down and say, okay, so what's this about? And I hear some old guy, 80-something years old, say, you know, I'm sitting in the chair in my pajamas and my house shoes and having a cup of coffee with my wife, reading the paper and petting my cat and thinking, life can't get any better than this. I don't know if I'd connect with that. I'm trying to figure out how come that Big E is able to get a gallon of happiness out of just an ounce of life. And how did I get so turned around that I can't get an ounce of happiness out of a gallon of life? Why am I so upside down in this living experience? That's what we're talking about tonight. Bill said, my friend promised that when these steps were done, I would enter upon a relationship with my Creator. And what does that mean? He means suddenly I'm going to feel right with God and right side up in life when these steps are done. It said, belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things are the essential requirements. And that's what the steps do. The steps cultivate in me willingness, honesty, and humility. And willingness, honesty, and humility are ego-deflating attributes. And as I deflate my ego, it allows me and God to just draw close together. You may not even believe in God, but you'll still feel it if you'll work the steps. And we don't care what you want to call it either, as long as it takes you to where it takes us. Willingness, honesty, and humility through the steps. To establish and maintain what? That what we're talking about. Being right side up in life. Getting a gallon of happiness out of just an ounce of life. But it is a process. And so steps 4 and 5, you know, almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, and the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. Requires it. If I want this experience. So I'm starting to do my step 4 and 5, you know. And of course, I had one thing that I just decided that there wasn't any way I was going to tell him that. And besides, I knew half of y'all all left something off anyway. So, you know, so I just decided I'd keep that one behind my back. I did not put it on the list, right? And so I called up my sponsor and I said, well, I'm ready to do my fifth step. And he said, I'm really busy here. He's put his house on the market and he was showing the house that weekend. He said, how about I meet you over at the club Monday after the noon meeting, and we'll go in the back room and do your fifth step. And I said, that'll be good. So the only problem with that was he left me all weekend to hear this little voice in the back of my head that sang, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. I know what I was hearing was one of y'all reading How It Works. And I know it was my God talking to me through one of y'all's voice. You know, God has a way of using alcoholics to talk to other alcoholics. And finally, you know, Sunday night I thought, okay. I get out my little Braille thing and I'm writing that one thing on the bottom of the list and I'm punching these dots. And poof, this little guy pops up. You know, the guy with the horns. And he says, don't worry, he can't read that. I thought, yeah, that's right. I can back out the last minute if I decide to. So I go into the meeting Monday over to the group and walked in the back room with him and sat down and got out my paper and I'm unrolling it and I'm getting ready to tell you. I remember sitting there thinking, ain't no way I'm going to tell him that one. No way. And so I unroll the paper and I get ready to start and he says, just a minute, Dave. And he got my hand and he said, God, I think you better help Dave be fearless and thorough from the very start. Whoa, that blew my mind. I thought he was reading my mind. I thought God was telling him he's fixing to try to sidestep you. I mean, it was, you know, when you're new in the program, I mean, you know, that's why I need to be accountable to another alcoholic. When I used to do that church thing, I'd go in there and say, you know, Pastor, I'm really sorry. And he'd say, God loves you like you are. God just loves you. We're so glad you're back. And I'd say, so I'm welcome back into the fold? Yes, you are. And I, you know, man. I could sidestep them people, man. You know, and the first time I tried to sidestep my sponsor, he nailed me to the wall. And I thought, whoa, this ain't church. And thank God that it ain't. Because for 25 years, I couldn't stay sober in church. So I started reading my list. And I got down to that last thing there. And oh, God. And I mustered up the courage. He just waited. And bleh, I puked it out. You know, I hadn't felt a thing during that whole fifth step. I hadn't felt nothing. Got to that last item, hung there for a moment, puked it out, and pop! I felt like I'd lived my life in a dark gray bubble up into that moment. I'd grown accustomed to that dark gray bubble. That was normal. A gray overcast existence. And it popped, and the sun came out. So suddenly, it was like, I mean, it just washed over me. It was like a rush, and it took my breath away. Now, I've heard a few people say they've had that experience with the fifth step. Not many. But I can tell you that everybody who does a good fifth step will tell you that over the next few days or few weeks, the lights drastically come up. You know, I'm totally blind. I have no light perception whatsoever. But when I step into the sun, I know it. And when I step into the shade, I know it instantly. I know the difference the way it feels. And I know instantly when a shadow falls between me and my Creator. Thank God for the steps. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep certain things, certain facts about their life to themselves. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they failed. We think the reason is they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They had not learned enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world. That's step five. But the promises of step five says that once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. And it goes to read all them fifth step promises. And I can tell you, one of the ones that's easiest to overlook, it says, now we can be alone at perfect peace and ease. It is so easy to overlook that, yet it's one of the greatest promises in the big book. Now I can sit quietly and be okay with the universe. Now I'm beginning to know what it means to get a gallon of happiness out of just an ounce of life. It goes on to say, we feel we are walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. I don't know if you remember your first love back in school. If you got to walk hand in hand down the hallway with her. And if you ever got to go walking through the park or took some walks, you know, you could get to where you didn't even have to talk. It was just being together. Hand in hand with the spirit of the universe, we're beginning to talk about a love experience with the Creator. His power, His love, and His way of life. When so many people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. Someone says, what's the most important fact in your life today? Not to take a drink. Oh no, there'll come a day, if I do my program right, where I'll say the most important fact of my life today is my conscious contact with my Creator. Not to let a shadow fall between me and the source of true and deep happiness. I heard a guy say one time, he said, he was hauling a bunch of stuff off to the dump. Had a load in the back of his truck, and he's coming down one of the highways there in Austin, Mopac, and he said a piece of carpet blew out into the highway. And he exited and looped around, went back over there and pulled off the side and waited for a break in the traffic. And he ran out there and grabbed that carpet and ran back and threw it in the truck. And he thought, I wouldn't have used to done that. You know, used to we let everybody else clean up our garbage, didn't we? And you know, and I heard another fellow say one day, he said he went in to get some gas and to pay for his gas, and the guy gave him back a dollar too much change. And he's walking out to his car going, I just made a dollar. And he put his hand on that car handle, and he turned around and walked back in there and gave him his dollar back. A shadow fell between him and his Creator. When people can say that the most important fact of their life today is to not let a shadow fall between me and the deep meaning of true happiness. It's in my conscience where I make conscious contact with my Creator, and He then makes it possible for me to get a lot of happiness out of just a little bit of life. And so the big book tells us that we continue to take personal inventory, that we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately. Make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And that little formula gets the gears turning to produce the solution to any problem you will ever have. That's what my sponsor told me. It's been true for 13 years. There were some times along the way that I wanted to balk. Because, you know, it's hard to do. I'm going to tell you about one of them times. You know, I had a little business thing I was doing with somebody. I met him through a mutual friend. And in the process of this business deal, I pissed him off. It was pretty crappy what I did. I'm ashamed of it. But he was so upset that he was going to tell our mutual friend what a low life I was. And you know, that freaked me out. And I did ask him, I did apologize to him, but he didn't accept my apology. He went off determined he was going to tell our mutual friend. And so I went home. I went in the house. I prayed. I asked God to remove my fear because I can already see the rumors getting started all over recovery. He's going to get back to my wife, and she's going to be ashamed to be married to me. You know how your fear blows everything up. And so I said, God, I'll remove my fear. And it says, discuss it with your sponsor immediately. Mm-mm. I'm right back where I was at that fifth step. So I skipped that one. Make amends quickly. Yeah, I made amends. He didn't accept it, but I tried. Turn your thoughts to someone you can help. Oh yeah, call my sponsors, check on them, do all my stuff. You know, turn your thoughts to someone you can help. That's right. Get out of yourself. Get out of yourself. Wasn't working. Next day I got up. Same thing. I asked God to remove the fear. Just call your sponsor and tell him. Mm-mm. I said, I'll tell you what though, I'll double up on the other ones. So I called the guy. I called the guy back, tried to make amends again. He said, don't you ever call me again. I tried calling all my sponsors and working with the people that I do. I tried to bury myself into service. You know, it was not working. On the third day, by that afternoon, I had an idea born straight out of insanity. I thought, I know what I'll do. I'm going to call our mutual friend first. And I'm going to say that this guy did this, and that's why I did this. And he's the asshole, not me. It was a lie. But it sounded good. And when you're insane, it sounds good. So does a drink. So now I grab my cordless phone, and because I don't want my wife to hear this conversation, I run out and I'm hiding in the car with the cordless phone, you know. And I'm fixing to call our mutual friend. I get a dial tone and I feel that little voice say, you better call your sponsor. You're about to go over the edge. So I called. And I told him, I said, you're not going to believe what I did, man. And it was hard to do, but I told him. And you know, I knew my sponsor was going to go, oh my God, Dave, listen, you stay hid there in the car. I've got a lawyer friend. We'll get you out of this. You just stay hid in the car till we get there. You know, I knew my sponsor was going to save me, right? But he didn't do that. He said, wow, Dave, it was hard for you to call and tell me that, wasn't it? And I said, it was really hard. He said, you're doing a good job, man. Keep up the good work. And he hung up the phone. But you know what? I had finally completed the process. The one thing I was leaving out, I finally did that one. And pop, that gray bubble popped again. And I was back in the sunlight of the Spirit. Hadn't even realized I've got out of it. It just kind of slowly wraps itself around you. You don't even realize it. But when it pops and you're back into serenity, it's like, whoa. What was I about to do? I'm sitting there holding the phone like, I can't believe what I was about to do. And so it says, we have ceased fighting. Right after that process, it says, and we have ceased fighting with anything. You know, I was about to go to war with this guy. I was going to try to shoot him before he shot me. And all of a sudden, pop. I'm in the sunlight of the Spirit and dropping my guns. I walked in the house and hung up the phone. Sanity had returned. It says, and we have ceased fighting with anything or anyone, for by this time sanity will return. That's what it says will happen if you do that. And that's what did happen. I want to talk to you a little bit about our conscience and how we, starting young, numb our conscience. You know, I remember when I was about 5 years old, had a friend lived across the street, and mother said I could go across the street and play for a little while. So I went over to play. Now, my friend had this little circus train. And in each one of them train cars was a circus animal. And in one of the little train cars was a plastic red gorilla. And man, he looked like a little King Kong in there. And I wanted him. So I hid that car in the high grass behind the garage. And I figured my chance would come. And sure enough, his mother stuck her head out the door and said, Jerry, it's time for your nap. Oh, Mom. No, you come on in now. So he went in the house, and I had to go home. But of course, I circled around behind the garage, got that little car, broke open the cage, got that little red grill out of it, and now I'm running across the street. And I feel like somebody's chasing me. I could almost feel the hand reaching for my collar. What do you think that was? My conscience. As a little boy, I first violated my conscience. I felt it. You know, I ran into my room and closed the door, and I'm sitting in there because I know whoever's chasing me is about to come busting through, you know. And I'm sitting there and I'm feeling real uncomfortable about this. And then I start trying to make myself feel better. I'm saying, now, because his folks had quite a lot of money, and I'm thinking, they've got a lot of money, they can buy him another one, and I deserve to have this, and you know, and my folks don't have that much money, and I deserve it, and I, that's right, I deserve it. And I made that bad feeling go away. You know, the big book says, deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. What does that mean? Well, that means that there's something there that tells me when I violate spiritual principles. And so I started working on trying to deafen my ears to that from the time I was a little boy. We all did. I heard a preacher say one time, he was quoting out of the Bible, it's something where it says, if we confess our sins, God is faithful to forgive us. If we say we have not sinned, we deceive ourselves. That's what justification is. I'm deceiving my conscience. I'm blinding myself to the truth. When I violate a spiritual principle, I have a choice. I can confess it, admit it to myself and to God, and try to make it right, or I can sit there and try to talk myself through it and quit feeling bad about it. I confess, or I can justify to ease my conscience. You know, someone said, there are three lies. There is the lie of commission. That's when I tell a lie. There is the lie of omission. That's when I hold back the truth. And there is the lie of... And there's the other lie, which I tell myself to make it okay to tell the other two. Someone said, rationalization, justification, and masturbation are three ways to screw yourself. It's what we call easing God out. You know, when you ease God out, what happens? You start having this separation anxiety. It starts as a low grade of fear. And we live that way. You know, my wife is a kindergarten teacher. It's funny, on the first day of school, you know, a week or two before school, mom's telling all the kids, you're going to be a schoolboy this year. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a school teacher, and here's your lunch kit. Mm-hmm. They're excited. And you take them to school, and you take them in there, and you go, here's your teacher. Yeah, and where's your, and this is going to be your desk, Johnny. Oh, boy. And then mom says, and I'll be back this afternoon to get you. Wah! Oh, he didn't know about that part. Separation anxiety. When I get separated from my Heavenly Father, I better lie my way out of this one. The big book says that we grow restless, irritable, and discontented until I can experience a sense of ease and comfort that I can get through a drink. Are you beginning to make the connection here? More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character, the one he wants his fellows to see. But in his heart, he knows he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. As far as he can, he pushes them far inside himself. He hopes they'll never see the light of day. He's under constant fear and tension. And that makes for more drinking. You know, back in high school when we first started, at first, hey man, we drank and bring in the kegs, man, just to liven up the party, didn't we? Bill said that alcohol is a great social lubricant. And it is. I found that her pants would slide off a little easier after a few drinks. Why? Well, because I've numbed her conscience. Alcohol is great to numb your conscience. It'll numb your conscience before the deed, And it'll help to numb your conscience after the deed. Coming to her senses, she is disturbed at certain things she did that she vaguely remembers that makes for more drinking. It's a situation that escalates. We say in the rooms, it's progressive. When I numb my conscience, however, I also block out my conscious contact with God. And then I begin to lose the ability to get lots of happiness out of a little bit of life. Then life begins to lose color and my world turns gray. That calls for more external stimuli. Maybe I'll call the bartender and see if he's got something that can help me out here. Oh, no, that's right. I'm not supposed to drink. Well, maybe I can call the psychiatrist, see if he can give me something to help me feel right when I'm not. All of those are temporary fixes to a spiritual problem. I must become willing to grow along spiritual lines. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, and the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others. And we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools and start on that fourth step. We have found much of heaven, and we've been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. You can't imagine when you've lived your life in a dark gray bubble and to watch it pop and feel the sunlight of the Spirit. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences, which has revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. Once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they show the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them. The great fact. Deep and effective spiritual experiences revolutionized my whole experience with life, with my fellow man, with my Creator. I get right side up through the process of these steps. Many people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives. So I want to establish and maintain that once I've achieved it. And so we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. You know, and you get more and more sensitive to this as you practice it consistently. It's amazing. I went to do a treatment center one afternoon, me and a sponsee. And then after that, we were going to go to a 5:30 meeting. And we're driving over there. Now, I don't always go to this club, but I go there to visit it. And when you walk in, their coffee is a quarter. It's not for free. It's for a quarter. And I had some money, but my sponsor said, "Hey, let's stop here at Jack in the Box and get a burger." And I thought, cool. So I did, got me a burger and a drink, and doggone it, all I got back was like 12 cents change. And I knew I was going to get a cup of coffee. Oh, well, just 13 cents, right? So I breezed over there, and I walked into before the meeting, I went into the coffee room and poured me a cup of coffee, and then I dug out my 12 cents, and I went to put it in the little can, and a couple of the people from that group walked into the room. And I kind of covered my hand and dropped it in and tried to make it make a bunch of noise, you know. It was cool. I didn't realize I was doing that. And I walked into the meeting with my cup of coffee, opened the door, walked in, and the chairperson was, the first thing on their opening little format says, "Welcome to such and such group. Coffee is 25 cents. Put your coffee in the can." And when I walked through the door, he was saying, "Coffee is 25 cents. Put your coffee, your quarter in the can." I just walked right past that too. It's just 13 cents. So I sat down and enjoyed the meeting. Now I went home, and that night I'm doing my inventory. I said, God, help me look at my day. I still ain't even aware that I've done this, not consciously. So I usually say, okay, God, let's see. I got up at this time. I did this. I went here. I went there. And I get a snapshot picture of my day in my head. And while I'm holding that picture, I say, okay, God, help me review my day. Was I resentful today? No. Was I selfish today? No. You'll feel it if it's there. And if you'll do it every night, you'll get to where God will. You'll feel it on things you never would have seen before. We're learning how to get the splinters out from between me and God. And I said, was I dishonest today? And I felt ding. And I thought, what? I'm looking back over my day, and I came to that place. And I said, God, it was just 13 cents. Good Lord, God, I mean, just 13 cents. It's not that big of a deal. And he said, well, if it really ain't that big of a deal, why are you trying to cover your hand there? And why are you trying to make it make some noise? It must have been a big deal to your ego, trying to save face. And I said, okay. And it says we inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So I said, what do you want me to do about that? And what I felt like God said was that he wanted me to go back over there and drop a dollar in the can for that cup of coffee. And to make sure I had a quarter for every cup of coffee from now on when I'm at that group. I said, okay, I can do that. Now, I go to that group only on Thursday. But the guy that I was riding with, I saw him at a meeting Friday night, and he goes over there on Saturday. And I said, hey, are you going over there tomorrow? And he said, yeah. I said, hey, here's a dollar. I will take this dollar and drop it in the coffee can. And he said, okay, cool. So when I got home that night, and I'm doing my little gratitude list, I said, thank you, God, that I saw Richard at this other meeting. I gave him a dollar, and I got all that cleared up. Great. So I got up Saturday morning, Saturday went by, and it was just Saturday was such a great day. It was such an awesome day that when I sat down Saturday night, I could not wait to write on my gratitude list to thank God for all the wonderful things that happened Saturday. And I get out my gratitude list there, and I'm thinking, and I really couldn't find anything spectacular that happened that day. But it felt like there was. There was no reason for me to feel this dang good. And then I said, let's see, I got up this morning, I made me a juice. I had a quiet time morning with my wife. I remember petting the cat. And I thought, oh crap, I'm starting to sound like Big E. How could this day have felt that good? Well, probably it had something to do with me deciding. While I'm sitting there looking at that, my finger bumped the night before up above where it said, God, I thank you tonight. I saw Richard and got to give him a dollar to drop in that can. I thought, could that be the reason why I felt so good all day Saturday? Don't underestimate the power of your nightly review. So it says, we found ourselves thinking when enchanted by a starlit night. Who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. That enchanted feeling with life. If I could just make it come and stay. Well, this program makes it possible for me to establish and maintain that enchanted feeling with life. Step 11 even teaches me how to improve my conscious contact with God. And so our program says we have entered the world of the Spirit. And Bill said it grows incredibly more wonderful as time passes. So if you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go through any length to get it, then you're ready to take our steps. Follow the dictates of a higher power, it says on page 100. Follow the dictates of your higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstance. Thank you for having me out.